tomorrow afternoon, over a billion people are going to, you know, synchronize their nervous systems to the completely unpredictable bounces of just a single ball.
It really is just an astonishing thing to think about when you frame it like that.
Right. It's a massive global emotional current that you are essentially inviting right into your living room.
It's a profound sociological phenomenon, really. I mean, we are taking the immense volatile energy of a public stadium
and trying to compress it.
Exactly. Attempting to compress it down into the domestic footprint of a residential home. And, well, that transition is rarely seamless.
Which is why we're here. Welcome to today's deep dive. It is Wednesday, June 10th, 2026.
The big day is almost here.
It is. The largest World Cup in human history, featuring 48 teams, by the way, kicks off tomorrow. And Toronto isn't just watching. We are an actual host city.
You can really feel it, too. The anticipation is just bleeding into everyday interactions all over town.
Oh, absolutely. The stakes locally are enormous. Because Canada plays its opening match against Bosnia and Herzegovina at BMO Field this Friday. That's at 3 p.m. Eastern time.
Prime time for a watch party.
Exactly. So our mission today is geared entirely toward you, the listener. We want to help you pull off the ultimate, totally stress-free Toronto watch party.
Because it can get stressful if you aren't prepared.
It really can. To help you avoid that, we're pulling insights from a highly detailed guide published by Party Boutiques. They're a really great local party supply store based up in Thornhill.
They've got this down to a science.
They really do.
Yeah.
Okay, let's unpack this. Hosting a watch party of this magnitude is entirely different from, say, a casual Friday night get-together. Mm-hmm. It's much closer to managing a professional soccer team.
That's a great way to put it.
Right. If you don't have a rock-solid tactical plan before that opening whistle, you just end up acting as a firefighter rather than a spectator.
Yeah, you spend 90 minutes managing logistics.
While everyone else actually experiences the match,
right.
Which is the worst.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's really about mitigating host anxiety through structural planning.
Like engineering the room.
Exactly. When you invite people over for a World Cup match, you are taking on the responsibility of facilitating their connection to this massive global event. Over 1.4 billion people watched the last final.
Wow.
Right. These are essentially massive, synchronized global events happening in local living rooms. To do that successfully, the environment needs to be engineered so that the host can effectively, well, disappear into the crowd once the game begins.
Which brings us to the first major phase, which the guide calls the blueprint.
The foundation.
Yes. Before you even think about the guest list or who is cheering for whom, you have to lock down the physical space.
Mm.
The Party Boutiques guide is very adamant about taking care of the visual environment early, like getting the decorations up on Thursday, the day before.
And there is a real practical science to that recommendation.
Because I usually wait until the morning of.
Most people do. They assume balloons need to be inflated just hours before the event. But foil balloons, they will actually hold their shape for weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And high-quality latex balloons maintain their integrity and air pressure for a solid 10 to 12 hours indoors.
So you can totally do it the night before.
By shifting that labor to the night before, you are systematically reducing the cognitive load on the host during those crucial hours leading up to kickoff.
Right. You're just clearing the runway.
Yeah.
But what really caught my attention in this guide is how they approach the spatial layout of the room. Specifically, the snack table.
Ah, yes, the snack table geometry.
Instinctively, when I have people over, I want the snacks right behind the main seating area. It feels convenient, you know, you reach back, grab a handful of chips, and you're good. But the guide explicitly warns against this. They say the snack table must go against a sidewall.
It's a fascinating observation on crowd movement within a constrained space.
Because soccer is different than other sports.
Right, entirely. You have to consider the physical reality of how people watch a soccer match. Unlike other sports that have, you know, natural, frequent commercial breaks or designated pauses, soccer is fluid.
There's no time out to grab a slice of pizza.
Exactly. The state of play can transition from a slow, methodical midfield buildup to a high-speed breakaway in a fraction of a second.
A counterattack just materializes out of nowhere.
Precisely. If your food station is situated behind the couch, the natural flow of foot traffic requires your guests to walk directly through the line of sight to the television.
Oh, I see where this is going.
You are inadvertently setting up a scenario where a guest, who is simply trying to refill their plate, physically blocks the screen at the exact moment a game-winning goal is scored.
which would cause an absolute riot in my living room.
Right. It's an environmental design flaw that can cause genuine friction among guests.
That makes total sense. You're essentially protecting the visual real estate of the room. And they apply that exact same logic to the decor, too. They point out that balloons should be anchored far away from the screen, ideally near the doorway or that side food station.
Because of the movement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The rationale is simple. Excited fans jump.
It's about anticipating the sudden release of kinetic energy.
Right.
During a tense match, viewers are physically mirroring the tension on the pitch. When a goal happens, that tension is released explosively. People leap off the couch. They throw their arms up.
Drinks go flying.
Yeah. So if you have decorative elements hovering near the television, they become casualties of that kinetic burst. Or worse, they get knocked into the screen and obscure the replay.
Okay. So the physical space is optimized for sudden movement. Love that. Let's look at the actual timeline for game day using that Friday 3 p.m. Canada match as our model.
A great case study.
The guide recommends a very specific countdown. At 1 p.m., so 2 hours out, you test the broadcast stream. And they make a really critical distinction here. You must test it on the actual television you intend to use, not just checking the app on your phone.
That is a crucial technical safeguard.
Because phones use data.
Well, people often assume that if their phone has a strong cellular connection, their home network is fine. But a smart television relies entirely on the stability of the home Wi-Fi router.
Oh, right.
And that router is suddenly going to be tasked with streaming a high-definition live global broadcast, discovering a buffering latency issue at 2.58 p.m., just as the national anthems are concluding.
Oh, that sounds like a nightmare.
It triggers an immense spike in cortisol for the host.
Yeah, you want to fight the router on your own time, not when you have a room full of people staring at you.
Exactly.
So, moving down the timeline. 2 p.m., 1 hour to go. You deploy the cold snacks, you know, the popcorn, the chips, and you get the drinks on ice. Then at 2:30 p.m., the guests arrive. And the guide suggests capturing the group photo right then.
Before the game starts.
Yes, before the emotional toll of the match physically alters everyone's appearance.
It's a humorous point, but remarkably accurate.
So true.
The physical posture and facial expressions of fans before a high-stakes match are vastly different from how they look after 90 minutes of sustained cardiovascular stress and emotional volatility.
I can definitely attest to that. We all look a lot older by the final whistle.
Yeah.
But here is where I want to push back on their timeline just a bit.
Oh, okay.
The guide advises holding the hot food, like sliders or timed pizza delivery, until halftime. My instinct is, why not just serve the heavy hot food right at kickoff?
Get it out of the way.
Right. If the whole goal is to reduce host anxiety, why not get all the serving duties completely out of the way before the referee blows the whistle so you can just sit down and be done with it?
I completely understand that instinct. But there is a profound behavioral strategy behind delaying the hot food until halftime.
Really? Like what?
If you serve everything at kickoff, you are creating a chaotic environment during the most critical establishment phase of the game.
The opening minutes.
Yes. The first 15 minutes of a soccer match dictate the tactical rhythm. If guests are juggling scalding hot trays, passing pizza boxes over each other, trying to secure napkins, their attention is entirely fractured.
They'll miss the early drama.
They are going to miss the subtle developments on the pitch. Or worse, an early goal.
So it's about protecting the viewing experience early on.
Yes, but more importantly, it gives the halftime break a necessary structured purpose.
Oh, I see.
A high-stakes match demands intense, almost exhausting psychological focus from the viewers. When the halftime whistle blows, there is a collective need to exhale.
The room just slumps back into the couch.
Exactly. By introducing substantial hot food at that exact moment, you orchestrate a psychological reset. The food acts as a natural focal point that physically shifts the guest's attention away from the screen. It facilitates interpersonal conversation and grounds the room before the tension ramps back up for the second half.
That's a really sharp way to look at it. You're using the food to force a mental intermission.
Precisely.
And the guide follows through on that idea at the very end of the match, too. Win or lose, at full time, they suggest deploying dessert. Their specific recommendation is cupcakes with these inexpensive little soccer ball toppers, which run about $1.99. They actually call this tactic a soft landing.
Because that is exactly what it is biologically.
How so?
After an hour and a half of elevated adrenaline, the body requires regulation. Sugar provides a rapid physiological grounding effect.
Comfort food.
Yeah. But psychologically, a themed dessert signals the definitive conclusion of the event. It offers a communal moment of closure that exists entirely independent of whatever the final score happens to be.
Okay, so we've established the physical environment and the chronological rhythm of the party. But we need to talk about the reality of the people in the room.
The social dynamics.
Yes, because hosting a World Cup party in Toronto is a uniquely complex social experiment.
Yeah.
This is one of the most multicultural cities on Earth.
Very true.
The odds of a single living room hosting a homogenous group of fans cheering for the exact same country are incredibly low.
It introduces a layer of diplomatic navigation that most typical parties never have to contend with. You are essentially bringing geopolitical loyalties into a shared domestic space.
Exactly. And the guide tackles this head on. Let's say you have a household where one parent is a diehard Canada supporter and the other is fiercely loyal to Croatia. And the guest list reflects that split perfectly.
A classic Toronto scenario.
Party Boutiques recommends a strategy they call zoning the room. You give each faction a designated corner, heavily themed in their specific team colors, and the couch in the middle is designated as contested territory.
I love that framing.
Here's where it gets really interesting. It feels like you are drafting a peace treaty by setting up these micro-embassies in your home.
It is a highly effective spatial negotiation. By explicitly zoning the room, you are acknowledging and validating the distinct identities of your guests.
Rather than pretending everyone is neutral.
Right. Rather than ignoring the rivalry, you are formalizing it in a way that feels playful rather than aggressive. It contains the tribalism within designated boundaries. And from a purely social perspective, it creates fantastic visual contrast for photographs.
The standoff photos on the couch are mandatory.
Absolutely.
But the diplomacy extends to the shared spaces, too. The guide is clear that the main snack table, the communal gathering point, must remain strictly neutral. And they suggest a very practical, low-effort hack for this.
The tablecloth trick.
Yes. You cover the table in a plain green tablecloth to instantly mimic the soccer pitch itself. Then you bring in some 9-ounce 3D soccer paper cups, which are around $3.99, and some generic football-themed plates for $4.99.
That green tablecloth strategy is just a brilliant exercise in nonverbal de-escalation.
It's so simple, though.
It is, but by transforming the central food station into the pitch, the host establishes a neutral zone that belongs to the sport itself, rather than to any specific nation.
Oh, that's clever.
It removes the pressure on the host to perfectly balance the flags or colors of competing teams. The color green serves as a universal baseline that instantly communicates the theme without demanding any complex, expensive design skills or balloon arches.
It's just smart, affordable baseline decor.
Yeah.
And speaking of keeping things universal, the guide addresses the guests whose teams might have already been eliminated or who just love the sport in general.
And neutrals.
Right. To make sure the room feels inclusive, they recommend hanging international flag swirls, which cost about $5.99, and using flag of all nations napkins, which are about $4.99. You essentially blanket the room in global iconography to avoid getting dragged into disputes over whose flag is prominently displayed.
It broadens the context of the gathering. It gently reminds the guests that while their specific rivalry is important, they are participating in a massive, interconnected global festival. It diffuses localized tension by emphasizing the sheer scale of the tournament.
And I think it's important to touch on the financial accessibility of all this. The guide emphasizes that soccer, as a theme, relies primarily on simple color blocking like red and white for Canada, blue and yellow for Bosnia, rather than highly specific, expensive, licensed character merchandise.
Which can add up incredibly fast.
Oh, totally. A full diplomatic setup for 8 people. The pitch tablecloth, the cups, the neutral plates, the international flags, and the balloons runs roughly $44 Canadian. Upgrading that to accommodate 10 people just means an extra pack of plates and cups, pushing it above $55.
Which is a crucial detail. Financial anxiety is a primary barrier that prevents people from hosting these kinds of events.
Shouldn't cost a fortune to have friends over.
Exactly. By demonstrating that a visually cohesive, diplomatically sound environment can be achieved for the cost of a few pizzas, you empower more people to open up their homes and take on that role of community facilitator.
All right, so the room is zoned, the neutral pitch is set, the timeline is moving flawlessly, and the game kicks off. But 90 minutes is a very long time for a group of people to remain completely static.
It certainly is.
This brings us to the unpredictable elements of hosting, the variables that a schedule alone cannot fix.
And anticipating human behavior is just as critical as anticipating the kickoff time.
Let's start with the youngest humans in the room. A highly tactical defensive midfield battle might be fascinating to an adult, but it's not going to hold the attention of a 6-year-old for an hour and a half.
No, it is not.
The guide suggests preempting this by creating a designated kids' corner. They recommend tossing in a $1.99 soft soccer ball and a stack of coloring supplies. It seems so simple, but I imagine it solves a massive problem.
It addresses the reality of attention spans. Children in a party environment want to participate, but they need to do so on their own cognitive terms.
They want to play.
Exactly. If you don't provide them with a structured, themed activity, they will inevitably create their own entertainment, which often involves running through those carefully protected sightlines we discussed earlier.
Blocking the TV again.
Right. The kids' corner allows them to feel involved in the soccer theme while containing their physical energy safely away from the television and the hot food.
It's essentially an alternative broadcast for the younger demographic.
That's one way to look at it.
On the completely opposite end of the spectrum, we have the adult variable. The guide refers to them as the commentators.
Ah, yes.
Anyone who has ever watched a sport with other people knows exactly what this means. It's that one guest who feels an irrepressible urge to narrate the entire match, loudly analyzing every pass, critiquing every formation, and explaining to the room what the manager should have done.
Yes, the phenomenon of the armchair manager.
We all know one.
It is actually a very common psychological response to the lack of control viewers experience during a high-stakes event. By vocalizing their analysis, they are attempting to exert a sense of agency over an outcome they have absolutely no power to influence.
That makes sense, actually.
However, it can completely dominate the auditory landscape of a room and exhaust the other guests.
So, how does Party Boutique suggest you handle the vocal armchair manager? They advise keeping a self-serve drink station completely full and easily accessible, specifically so you can hydrate the commentators.
It is a remarkably elegant behavioral nudge.
Right, just hand them a drink.
Rather than confronting the guest and asking for quiet, which introduces negative friction into the party you offer hospitality, the physical act of holding a beverage and frequently taking a drink acts as a physiological interruption. They literally cannot narrate the game continuously if they are taking sips of water or soda.
That is amazing.
It is a soft intervention that relies on biology rather than confrontation.
I find that incredibly clever. You're just quietly managing the room's acoustics with a cooler of drinks. Now, let's pivot to the external variables. Because the World Cup schedule isn't just afternoon games. Toronto is also hosting evening matches with 7 p.m. kickoffs.
Which changes the dynamic entirely.
Totally. The guide notes that backyard projectors are a fantastic option for these later games, but they flag two major environmental factors you have to plan for. First, the weather. If you live anywhere near Lake Ontario, those June afternoons and evenings can get remarkably breezy. If you don't physically tie down your balloon clusters, they're going to end up 2 streets over.
The outdoor environment introduces chaotic elements that a living room naturally insulates against. Wind disrupts the visual aesthetic, certainly, but it also creates distracting ambient noise and physical movement that pulls focus away from the screen.
But the second, much larger consideration for evening games is the municipal reality of where we live. In municipalities across the Greater Toronto Area, like Toronto itself, Vaughan and Markham Noise, bylaws tighten significantly after 11 p.m.
Yes, the 11 p.m. cutoff.
And this leads us directly into the biggest unpredictable factor of a major tournament, which is the extra time trap.
This is the critical transition from the group stage to the knockout rounds.
Right. So looking at the schedule, on July 2nd, Toronto is hosting a round of 32 match at 7 p.m. If that game is tied at the end of 90 minutes, they play an extra 30 minutes. If it is still tied, it goes to a sudden death penalty shootout.
The tension is unbearable.
That broadcast can easily drag well past 2.5 hours, pushing right up against those 11 p.m. noise curfews. The guide explicitly warns hosts to stock at least 25% more snaps just to survive the distance of a knockout match. So what does this all mean? How on earth do you balance the ecstatic, terrifying reality of a sudden death penalty shootout with the very real threat of a municipal noise complaint from your neighbors?
What's fascinating here is how the constraint actually modifies the experience, often for the better.
Wait, really? How's
You have two intense opposing forces colliding. You have the immense, unbearable psychological tension of a penalty shootout, which is arguably the most dramatic scenario in global sports, combining with the strict ticking clock of a noise curfew. You might assume the need to be quiet would ruin the festive atmosphere, but it actually condenses and heightens the drama.
You're saying the restriction makes it more intense.
Absolutely. It transforms an open backyard into a whispered pressure cooker.
A whispered pressure cooker. I love that.
Think about it. Instead of 20 people jumping around and shouting loudly into the night sky, which dissipates the energy, you have 20 people gripping the edges of their seats, leaning forward in the dark, and collectively holding their breath.
Oh, I can picture it.
When the ball hits the back of the net, the celebration is constrained. It's a series of intense hissed cheers, silent fist pumps, and tightly gripped shoulders. It forces a physical proximity and a shared conspiratorial intimacy among the guests that is incredibly powerful. The necessity of silence makes the emotional experience far more acute.
That is a phenomenal visual. 20 people losing their minds in total, whispered silence at 11:15 at night. It really does sound more memorable than just yelling at a television.
It takes an administrative limitation, a city bylaw, and naturally converts it into a defining feature of the event.
Well, there you have it. You now possess the comprehensive blueprint to pull off an incredible stress-free World Cup watch party starting tomorrow.
You are officially ready.
You understand the psychology of the timeline, the spatial layout needed to protect those crucial sight lines, the diplomatic decor required to manage a multicultural Toronto crowd peacefully, and the behavioral nudges to survive the unpredictables of a 90-minute match.
From kids to commentators.
Exactly. Now, you just need the physical supplies to make it happen. You can get absolutely everything we've discussed today, from the green pitch tablecloths and the 3D soccer cups to the international flag napkins and balloons, by simply placing an order at partyboutiques.ca.
Super convenient.
Or, alternatively, if you are a tactile planner and want to see things in person, you can visit their storefront at 7724 Yonge Street in Thornhill. They offer same-day pickup, which is an absolute necessity if you are scrambling to prepare for Friday's kickoff.
And this raises an important question for those who simply do not have the bandwidth to manage this themselves.
Oh, right, the full service.
Yes. It is worth noting that Party Boutiques also offers comprehensive decoration and venue setup services across the Greater Toronto Area. You can outsource the environmental engineering entirely and simply arrive as a guest at your own event.
Let the professionals handle the wind-resistant balloon anchors while you focus on the psychological timing of the halftime sliders.
A very smart delegation of duties.
As we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with something to consider beyond the chips and the decorations. We spend the vast majority of our daily lives sequestered inside highly personalized, algorithmically isolated digital bubbles.
It's true.
My social media feed, my news, my entertainment, it looks entirely different than yours. We very rarely experience the exact same media at the exact same time anymore.
We live in an era of deeply atomized consumption. The concept of a true mass media monoculture has largely fractured.
Precisely. But starting tomorrow and continuing for the next 6 weeks, something radical happens. Half the human population on this planet will voluntarily step out of those isolated bubbles.
Millions of living rooms all synced up.
They will stare at a rectangular screen and react to the exact same unpredictable, unscripted moments at the exact same millisecond. A player misses a crucial penalty, and a billion total strangers will gasp simultaneously. What does it actually do to the human psyche to suddenly share a singular, unfiltered, deeply emotional reality with a billion other people?
It's a profound thought.
It's a connection we rarely get to feel anymore. Have fun at the match and keep diving deep.